Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the 4Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our cues of the Force, questions of the Force, and Force willing, there will also be answers of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Kat Napsok. I don't have all the answers, but the Force does. At least I hope so. I lean on the Force a lot to give the answers I need.
You know, that would be fun if sometimes we did like a joke version of Questions of the Force and our answers to every question would be like Yoda just saying, I'll meditate on this. Nothing else.
It's, you know, and it's not a bad practice either to just sometimes take some time with your answers.
Yeah, just say, yeah. I don't know. But I think today we'll probably have some thoughts and some opinions, Ken, right? But before we share those thoughts and opinions of the Force, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week we are recommending Mission to Disaster, the next High Republic adventure by Justina Ireland. We'll be diving into that soon. And if you want to give it a listen, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audio book. It's free and it helps us. And can we have an update on our other offer?
An update on the other offer. We've been working with the fine folks at Inside Editions for a while now. We really love them. We love their books. We have them. We read them. We display them. Sometimes I just look at them from afar and then go up close, near, far, like I'm Grover from Sesame Street. But Inside Editions is changing up their affiliate program. So the link we've been sharing with y'all, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35, no longer works. Currently doesn't work. We still love this company. Like I said, we really do recommend the books. But we're going to let you know as soon as the new affiliate program is up and running. We've been talking to them and looking forward to getting back up on that. Thanks to a few of our listeners who reached out and said, hey, I'm trying to use the link, but it's not. It helped us find this information out. So we appreciate that. And we'll keep updated on Inside Editions. Joseph.
Yeah, and thanks again to everybody for just wanting to use that link to help us out as well as check out the great book. So thank you all for that. With that info, Ken, let's dive into some questions. We got two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter, and we go to Oscar Film Forecast, which I know is a great descriptive title, but I love imagining that's just somebody's name. What a great name that would be.
It's like a good Muppet character almost.
yes. Well, Oscar Film Forecast, the wonderful human behind that actual handle, says this. Hey guys, thanks as always for the amazing discussions, and I look forward to hearing more from Jennifer Landa. My question is centered around that December 2023 untitled Star Wars film release date that is still set. We know it won't be Rogue Squadron or Taiki's film yet. And we are now 3 months into 2022. If a film were to hit this date, I think it would have to film soon. Do you think something will release at this point? If not, will the next Star Wars film not be until 2025 so it doesn't mess with the Avatar films? Thanks, guys. I should point out, as always, that sometimes it takes a little while to get to these questions. So Oscar had said, we know it won't be Rogue Squadron. There's been conflicting reports now. There's been reports that Rogue Squadron is on hiatus, paused, and there have been other more recent reports that it is actually moving forward. So it is, you know, a Schrodinger's cat of Rogue Squadron. We don't know where it's at, but I think this question came in before that more recent reporting about maybe Rogue Squadron is going forward. So with that in mind, Ken, what are you thinking about this mysterious untitled Star Wars film? Is it going to happen? What's it going to be? What are your thoughts?
I have no inside track on this information, none at all, but I'm not expecting anything in 2023. Look, pre-production, we're not talking about pre-production, but production, I just don't think that's happening. But you still, I guess, you know, you could turn things around a lot quicker than you used to in the old days, right? So you could still shoot something this summer and have a year to get it all ready and you know, make changes the weekend the film's coming out, whatever you want to do. it's still possible. I just don't think anything. And maybe just this is really just like a personal expectation of just making sure in my heart, I'm like not worried about anything in 2023. So 2025 might be it, which is crazy to think that'd be about 6 years after Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I think at the end of the day, because of this Disney Plus era, I'm good with that. And if something pops up in 2023, great. But I'm now at the point in my fandom where I'd rather they wait, get something right, and then come out swinging when it's time, you know?
Yeah, I think that's my big picture opinion. We'll get into some of the details and the what ifs and in questioning things. But I think also just big picture, I think you're so right to start there. What I want for the next Star Wars film is for it to be a big win for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The landscape of the way a successful film is going to be defined, particularly a Star Wars film, they really want it to go big, right? Solo did fine in terms of a movie. It's just by the standard of a Star Wars movie and by the money, accrued from the reshoots, it didn't do great. But as a movie, another movie that made that, you know, it made a lot of money. The point is, you need Star Wars to be a big hit in terms of the box office analysis. Obviously, I want it to be a great, great movie that as many fans as possible enjoy. But I think that is really challenging for the films because Star Wars means so much and so many different things to the fandom that and the general public that there could be so many different expectations. And now we're getting this nice thing with Disney Plus where, yeah, if people kind of don't like something, you certainly hear about it, but it's like, okay, we'll wait 3 months, 4 months,
yeah,
probably starting less, then there'll be a new Star Wars for you to check out. And it's not as make or break as the return of Star Wars to the theaters. There's so much pressure on it that I just want it to be a win. And that's more important to me than when it comes out.
Yeah. Look, honestly, this whole situation is kind of a bummer to me. I'll admit, of like, I'm not having a movie even this year. And not of that was, you know, you could look at different factors, including the pandemic, but 2023, if there's nothing, like I said, I will really, really be fine. I don't mind waiting, but I'm not going to lie. The whole thing's a bummer. I remind myself often, and I even had some conversations this week with some friends of, hey, don't forget him. It took the MCU a little bit to get really up and running and start hitting home run after home run. So I have no doubt that whatever is quote unquote going on the movie side of Star Wars can be righted or changed or made more bolder. I don't know. You talk about a win. I do want to win. It's impossible. It's impossible to make a movie that everyone loves, but it's something I want. And as much as I love Rise of Skywalker, a hill I will die on about that movie, which I told some friends this week, and they dropped their coffee. I'm tired of having to feel I need to defend that. And you shouldn't have to defend anything, including whether you don't like it, right? That's not what we're talking about. But as a Star Wars fan, as a Star Wars podcaster, I don't want to have to explain over and over again why I like Solo.
Yeah,
that's the part of it that it's a bummer for me. And I think everything changed from The Last Jedi, a movie we love here as well and celebrate. We celebrate all of them. We dig into all these movies without a doubt. But also, I have to remind myself, Rogue One, despite the big box office and it being, I think, more loved as time goes on. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of conversations around Rogue One about things that it didn't work and the reshoots, all the stuff going into it. So, yes. A big win all the way around, whatever that win might be. I want that. And if we need to wait to get that win, I'm going to wait.
Yeah. And it might be that waiting even longer will get the hunger back for audiences, right? To want an event. But then also at the same time, that does create even more pressure, right?
Yes.
Exactly what kind of film it is. There's so much conversation right now with movies, but also even with live theater of what is going to bring people out is not small, intimate experiences and stories. It needs to be an event to really bring people out. So that even kind of puts some pressure on what kind of story is it, you know?
Absolutely, I know. Even let's say it's Rogue Squadron. We really don't know anything about Rogue Squadron, right? Someone's fooling you if they say they do. Is that too small, or is a smaller, more focused Rogue One like story going to work? Now I'm not talking about Solo, a Star Wars story, but like something different. Or does it need to be chapter one of the new Old Republic trilogy that brings people back? I don't know that answer. We'll be there regardless.
Or Mando and Grogu on the big screen.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things it could be. I want to talk about some of the details of Oscar Film Forecast. Great question. I feel like there is a possibility that it's still Rogue Squadron. There were those reports and rumors that an Old Republic film is quietly being developed. I still think that an Old Republic a film might be the way to go, because I think it is something that seems grand and big, and it is familiar but different at the same time. Of have you ever seen hundreds of Jedi and hundreds of Sith fighting? I still think there is a power to that. But I think you mentioned this, Ken, and I really agree. I think if a movie is going to happen in 2023, some pre-production news has got to break soon. Director, writer, cast announcement, confirmation that Rogue Squadron is firing on all space cylinders. I think if there's a possibility of the film hitting December 2023, we'll know by May, either May the 4th or Star Wars Celebration. I think if there's nothing in Star Wars Celebration, then I don't think it's happening in 2023.
Yeah, that's a great indication. So there you go. More importance on getting those passes.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this, because you've had you've documented your long journey with the volume.
Yeah.
And the technology and it getting better and different. You know, there's a big step forward where famously now a crucial scene in The Batman was made possible by The Volume. So it's making its way to the big screen. And I think that the tech is advancing all the time. Do you think there is a possibility of using not only the volume, but the Star Wars teams, the designers, everybody involved, costume, everything, who've kind of been building this factory of Disney Plus shows where they're having to turn around content really, really fast? You read some of those art of books we're talking about, like, yeah, we're making, like, content wise, just minutes on screen, we're making like three movies and half the time. Do you think the whole production machinery from the teams, the people, the technology of the volume is going to allow a big budget Star Wars film to be made faster?
I absolutely think it will happen. And yes, my relationship with the volume has changed and ebbed and flowed. And it's always been pretty positive, especially from the technical side. I totally have been on board with that. I just feel I was too aware, and it's gotten less aware. But then I always give the example, and other people have tweeted that too, of like, I'm not sure about the volume. I like it when they're on practical things like that Werner Herzog office. Oh, that was the volume. Damn it. you know, so it works. And I think you're right, but it's about the team, the time, the process, the cost. And if you go into that first season making of where they spent a lot of time and with several episodes to go take you into the process, stuff about the fight coordination and how a lot of the pre-directing, it's not just pre-visualization now, a word my tongue doesn't want to say. It'll if you listen long enough, my tongue doesn't like certain words. I absolutely believe that's going to be in Star Wars films and the film industry, whether or not, again, I still want to go. I'm with JJ. But Boyega, we're out here in the desert so I can get the sun on your eyes. Like, I want that. But the technology is just going to obviously rapidly improve, and the time and the money is going to be a big factor that makes it go into the movies.
Yeah, I think so too. Final thing from Oscar's question is, do you think Avatar is going to get moved around, or is James Cameron going to be like, nope, I don't care what's going on with your Star Wars. I have claimed these December dates.
I don't know. You know, I have no Avatar jokes to make, folks. I'm indifferent to the franchise. And I actually overall really do like James Cameron, at least, as a filmmaker. I don't want to hang out with him personally, but I don't see that moving. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Fascinating. I have no strong opinion on that either. I can see Disney wanting to go like, we're going to shift you to, a summer month. And I can also see James Cameron saying no very publicly. So I'm looking forward to that discussion. I think that'll be an interesting one if it happens at all. Great questions. Oscar Film Forecast, thank you very much. We're going to move on to our next question from Ostensible Disciple. Ostensible says, something I really love about this podcast is your insight as writers, creators. I would love it if you all could speak a little bit about your journey as artists. Did you ever feel like your career pursuits pulled you away from Star Wars fandom, or did it bring you closer to it? I ask because I assume a lot of your listeners also aspire to be creators of some kind. And from my experience in art school, there was certainly an attitude that Star Wars was lowbrow and not to be discussed in an academic setting unless to criticize / condemn. Thank you very much for the nice compliments and the fun question, Ostensible. Ken, where do you go with this in your various careers? Everything from broadcasting to stand up. Do you feel like Star Wars has been something that has helped your career, or do you feel like elements of your career have said, ooh, stay away from the space movie, that's less than?
Right now it is my career, right? Thank you, Star Wars. I have something to talk about. It's been a long journey, as with you, and the start of my journey as a writer type, because you meant the radio, the comedy, all that stuff, was directly inspired by Star Wars and other 80s properties, of course. But it was branded a nerd thing during my teen years, as you experienced as well, and so many experienced, Joseph. But it wasn't until I got to my screenwriting and film production classes in college, which were the same classes I would duck out to get the Power of the Force figures, mind you, that I was surrounded by people that didn't look down on Star Wars. It wasn't a nerd thing. It wasn't to be made fun of. It was to be studied. And we actually studied the original trilogy in class. That was a great 3 weeks. We watched each movie and everyone was excited. And I just remember feeling that energy of, it wasn't like, oh, me and my friends got to whisper in the corner of our math class anymore. So that was great. But the cycle for me repeats, in different aspects, and including comedy. And you and I've talked often about it, but I was censored a lot. I remember I pitched a sketch in my Groundlings training days. It was a total nerd sketch. It was an action figure sketch and got some laughs. And my director was like, nerd stuff. I literally said, nerd stuff, not going to work, not going to put in the show. So it caused me to move away. Around the same time, I found myself being a little bit more inspired by a lot of the films that came out in 99, 2000. And as a writer, I was trying to write my Magnolia and American Beauty, not my Star Wars film, that kind of thing. So, but it is the podcast days, and I'll end my biopic here, Joseph, it has a magnolia. But it is the Star Wars days. It is Jedi Alliance. It is Force Center, particularly the last 2-3 years, where you and I have really rolled up our sleeves and I followed you into the theme cave that I think I see Star Wars now entering an era where it is going to influence my writing more, because I'm trying to get back to writing. I moved away from it a lot over the last few years, and that's some of my personal goals right now. And I think I see Star Wars as just space sagas anymore, where the aspects, the people around me made me think of that. I love filmmaking. I love this. I love that. Oh, and I also like that Star Wars stuff. And I put them into two categories for a long time, including into the early 2010s. And now I'm able to look at, they're not just space sagas. They're these, a way to tell a big story based around intimate emotional themes. And I think we're entering a new era of influence on me. If that makes any sense.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And I think you're right to start this with it. We're very lucky that, you know, at this point, Force Center is our part-time day job.
along with
the other creative pursuits that we want. So that just that has been, you know, a huge, huge influence. You know, I talk to my dad and tell him about, like, yeah, you know, I know you only kind of know the podcast thing, Dad, but it's like, my dad understands. So it's like my part-time day job. And he's like, well, that's great. I remember holding you on my lap and you watched that space movie and you wouldn't stop talking about it. And now you're still talking about it and it's working out. That's great. Yeah, yeah. So it's great to hear from my dad's perspective, who's worked very hard in his life. So my creative path has been both away and toward Star Wars, of much like yours, and very much like ostensible is describing. It's pulled me to and away from Star Wars. I was talking, I think during our ranked episode, about getting my visual art degree at the University of Minnesota. And that was something that my pop culture interests, particularly Star Wars, was very, very much less than. You know, if I had come in with a painting of Luke Skywalker, that would not have gone well.
Yeah.
It would not have been received well. And then there were parts of my theater career. I did so much sketch and a lot of playwriting in the Fringe Festival, a lot of one-person shows, a lot of shows that I entirely wrote and directed. I've done children's theater, dinner theater, I've written both of those, I've performed both of those, so done Shakespeare, just done a lot of acting and writing in theater. And that was really weird because for the most part, Star Wars was definitely seen as lowbrow, silly, less than for a large chunk of that theater career. And like, you could make a very surface level joke about Darth Vader, but if you went any deeper than that, people wouldn't know what you're talking about. But at the same time, so when I was really kind of getting going on the theater and comedy career, and this is all happening in Minneapolis, there was a time where I had two lives. I had the theater life, and then I had the do comedy at conventions life, where you could make all the pop culture jokes. And I have so many great memories of doing sketches about Star Wars, just lots and lots of different ones. I don't need to go into describing them because I've talked about them before. My brother and I started doing a late night comedy show with a bunch of friends that was all people who generally lean towards the pop culture genre obsessed. We attracted an audience that that liked that. So we could, the careers, the two worlds started to blend, and I could do a lot of, my brother and I did a sketch about action figures that was pulled from our real life, where my brother and I made up narratives and we were very gentle with our action figures. And we didn't like it when loud neighbors came over, the loud neighbor kid who, you know, didn't care for stories and wanted to attach small explosives to action figures and watch them blow up. And it was about that tension of like, Timmy can't come over. Yeah. Timmy's going to be really, really rough on Hoth Leia. I will not allow it, you know? and like, that was one of like the sketches that, you know, we did. And it started to merge where the nerd world and the theater world, now they're in they're utterly combined.
Mm-hmm.
They were when I left the Minneapolis comedy theater scene about 8 years ago now. They had really, really merged as genre, and the kind of pop culture storytelling like that became more successful in the real world, right? And so I think somebody probably in my same experiences now might not have as much of that push-pull with Star Wars. And then for what I've been doing for the last several years is a ton of screenwriting and pitching, and Star Wars has been huge for that because obviously just in the business, in the old Hollywood business, Star Wars is very accepted. Everybody would love a new Star Wars, right? It's almost expected that you're into Star Wars. I think I've told this story before where I had a meeting with an exec where I was supposed to they were like, here are all these characters we own, pitch us something. And the exec just found out I was a Star Wars fan, and we spent almost an hour talking about Star Wars. And then I was like, can I pitch the things? And I almost got a second meeting just because the guy wanted to talk about the Rise of Skywalker trailer. So that's like a snapshot of like the way it is in the business for me. And then I think very similar to what you're saying about what I want to do as a creator. I'm really, Star Wars is invaluable. I'm inspired by the behind the scenes philosophy of it, that Lucas truly wanted to be inspired by what he loved as a child, but then put it through his own personal filter and make it his own, along with obviously all of his extremely wonderful collaborators. But starting from that point of like, don't necessarily chase the trends because that doesn't always work. Right. Instead, what do you love and how can you make it your own? So the behind the scenes truth of how Star Wars came to be is invaluable. And then in terms of just being inspired by what I want to write, I think you said it really well, Ken, looking past the absolutely fun, great surface of Star Wars to what's actually being talked about and what do I think about those big picture themes. So a lot of the stuff that I write is very Star Wars like that on the surface. It's got some, you know, big hook and it's got some genre, you know, some kind of sci-fi or space fantasy or over the top kind of elements. But what I always want to write about is how do we get past fear? How do we manage to connect? How do we balance our need to be there for the group as humans, but also to value ourselves, you know, as individuals? And all these themes that like, oh, I find myself interested in of they're all there in Star Wars. And all our discussion about them really makes me think about what I want to write.
That's an interesting point. Not that this is the direct question and that you and I are, you know, in this, think of ourselves in this position to give life lessons on writing and everything. But I, for so many years, I mean, I've written a lot of screenplays. I got close on a couple show ideas. All of it, I wouldn't even touch now because I wasn't digging in deeper. I was worried about the how and the what when writing and never really asked myself why. And just last couple years, I joke, but you're so good at themes and just themes and lives and everything, and taking the Star Wars discussions that way here on Force Center has helped me see Star Wars in a different way, but also helped me see even Game of Thrones in a different way. Other movies that I love that I've loved for years, I never spent a lot of time on the why, which is why I hit a lot of roadblocks as a writer and even as a comic, where I believe art is communication and comedy is my way of talking to the world about things, where before I just was like, you know, a little bit of that, but also let's work out some self-loathing and tell some jokes. and I'm not saying even that's the 100% best path, but I'm looking forward to having my love and insights and lessons I continue to learn from Star Wars. I'm looking forward to starting to take that and putting it back into my writing. In a way I'd never done. So, that was always there. George always had it there. I just was living on the pew, pew, pew side of things, which is also, by the way, a fun side to live on.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and I think that it's the power of like that, of what, you know, Lucas never had that,
sort of like, well, I would like to tell this very deep and important story, so I guess I'll have to have some laser swords and racing cars on top of it. You know, like,
right.
I think that's what so inspires me about it, and why I go on about the tension so often is that, you know, those old adventure serials like might not have been like the deepest, most profound thing, but what happened to the people watching them was profound, that they needed that thrill. They needed that, you know, expansion of imagination of what all could be out there. And we do talk about it as a surface level, but sometimes it's not like that. I think I love so much that Lucas said, like, that spoke to me. Something about that spoke to me, but then also all these myths speak to me. So how can I combine these? And just letting yourself have that exploration of what speaks to me and then asking yourself why and trying to bring that to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so we could obviously go on and on. Thank you for being interested in our lives as creators and fans of Star Wars. And I hope that anything we said might be at least cathartic to the journey. But I think that's the nature of Star Wars in a lot of genre stuff, is there's so much inspiration to be gained from it in lots of life paths, but certainly as a creator. And then I think as long as Star Wars lives, as popular as it is, I think we're still going to run into people who go, the space movie? just a challenge that will always exist. Any final thoughts on that before we take a break?
No, I want to get back to writing here right now. I'll be right back.
Yeah, no, I feel you. We're going to take a quick break, write some screenplays, and then we will be back.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey.
And we are back to continue this episode of Cues of the Force. We're going to go now to questions from our patrons on Patreon. First up is Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, hello, hope you're happy. Something that's been on my mind more and more. Do you think Lucasfilm's secretive approach to marketing dampens the hype for forthcoming projects, thus making fans generate their own hype in the form of predictions that then leads to upset when certain things don't happen? On one hand, I like to be as unspoiled as possible, and I enjoy surprises. On the other hand, I also like the hype and the buzz that's generated by an explosive media campaign with pre-release action figures and score snippets. Looking specifically at the Book of Boba Fett, it's quite interesting to think about all the material that the company were sitting on. Mando, Cad Bane, a Rancor, Grogu, Luke, some of which would have drawn even more attention, eyes, and subscribers to a show that is essential viewing for the Mandoverse. Why do you think 95% of it is hidden? Is it just to preserve the surprises, which seems extremely selfless? Or is it because streaming shows don't rely on opening weekends and instead play the long game? Taking Chrysanthemum as an example, when he appeared, for a bunch of people, it was, yeah, cool, it's from the comics. For the vast majority, it would have been, wow, look at that huge, cool, badass-looking Chewbacca. Mm. Could that not have been used in pre-release trailers, Funko Pops, lunchboxes? Most recently, finding out that John Williams is coming back to work on Kenobi is wonderful, but it would have been really nice to have it announced in a cool and official way first, instead of reading weeks of rumors and confirmations on online entertainment news sites. Keep it in secrets, feeding the hype. What is the balance? Sorry, this question got away from me a bit. Thank you for centering the Force. These are all really great thoughts. There are a lot of different ways to take this. I feel like there's a lot of there's the kind of one big picture question about balancing the secrets and the hype, but also lots of little mini questions within this this wonderful essay by Andrew. And I do not mean that in any negative way. We encourage and appreciate the complex thoughts, the nuanced questions that we get for this show. So, Ken, where do you want to go with this? Grab a question and go where you would like.
Well, I'll tell you, I had some notes, but then the one of, and hearing you read this, I almost want to start with that last spot. And I'm going to give some Ken could get grumpy alerts. I don't know. It's a Monday morning when we're recording. You know, I only had one cup of coffee. So bear with me, everybody here. But like with the John Williams thing, I would love that too. I'd love a big Star Wars commercial, YouTube, whatever, Twitter video. Guess who's back? Kenobi theme.
Back not again. Eminem, John Williams.
If Williams is there, that would have been great. But this is why, and I don't mind the, and I think the official confirmation, we usually wait for a variety, a Hollywood Reporter, which are actual, you know, that's the music, movie journalist job, and they're calling, and it's the old time press calls, you know, I hear, hey, I got a lead. I hear Williams is back. What do you got to say here? There's all that, but the other industry that's come up around it, which, you know, some might put Force Center in that kind of the film punditry world. I don't consider us in the movie news world. We talk about Star Wars news, but we're not breaking stories here. We're not trying to do that. Other people are. It's a living. I'm not here to toss any egg at their face like I'm a protester at a throwing blood on fur here. I'm not doing that. I'm just the scoops and stuff destroy any chance of an official Williams announcement to me. That's just my opinion on it. We're hearing it now, mind you. Outside of Twitter, outside of the Star Wars world, you know, there's probably some fans who are like, John's back. You could do a commercial now and that would be exciting, or do a Twitter release. But you know what I mean? That's changed a lot of the marketing too, where without a doubt, I believe they let so many of the castings of Mando season 2 out and out of the bag so they could hide the Luke one as best they possibly could. Right. Like,
yeah,
give them some morsels. We'll hide the cookie here. I absolutely think this is the case. Anyways, I'll start there, Joseph. I'll start there.
I think it's a good place to start. I luckily missed the rumors about John Williams. I think I have maybe kind of curated my personal Twitter feed to avoid the unofficial scoops, which, like, yeah, as you said, I'm not criticizing anybody who that's their job, but I don't want that. I want official news from Lucasfilm is my very, very, very first choice, but also, like, established trades, you know, reporting things which, you know, come often from the studios or from management of actors and all that kind of thing often. that like that we had that this week with Christopher Lloyd, right? That's mm-hmm. not Lucasfilm announced official. Yet, but it's from a pretty reputable source. Yeah. We've been talking about this for a long time, ever since that great Marvel event at El Capitan, where they announced that they were doing Civil War and had, you know, had the actors out on stage and Robert Downey Jr. playfully pushing Chris Evans as Captain America. Like, we're doing it. Iron Man and Captain America are going to fight. I think we've had some glimpses of that with Star Wars. The great pageantry and just kind of show vibe, hype vibe of Kathleen Kennedy bringing out Ian McGregor and saying, are you going to play Obi-Wan Kenobi again? And him saying, yes. Right. Mm. Things that really give it some pageantry. Anything that could be announced with pageantry or a show personship style from Lucasfilm, I would love that. Because I think it gets to what Andrew is talking about is hype, right? Getting people truly, truly excited. It's not just the information. Sometimes it's the way the information is shared. And anything Lucasfilm can do to make it a fun event. So the announcement of the news is fun as well as the news. I'm all for it.
Yeah. And as far as like specifically to Book of Boba Fett, no doubt Book of Boba Fett had a different approach. We talked about that. We got some couple questions about that recently. I think of the cast list. There was no like cast list. We knew next to nothing what it was about. And I think you and I really stand on the side of the trailers told you what was coming thematically. And if you're paying attention to that, you can kind of pick it up on what the show's going to be about, minus the details. Without a doubt, it's a little bit different, but I felt we didn't know a ton of Mando. It is different, but we don't know all the ins and outs of the marketing conversations. It's so researched. Down to the day and the minute and the time, social media and the marketing, it's not run by interns. It's a thing. It's analytics, all that kind of stuff. TV spots and trailers are not a crapshoot. So there must've been something telling them that, this is all we need to do other than a why. Like it wasn't like someone's like, let's make sure we don't spoil something. That's part of the conversation. You know, that's not driving all of it. The times, the numbers, what's coming out on Disney as well, Marvel side, all that kind of stuff. And to drive subscriptions. So there's some reason they're doing that. And I'm okay with that side of it. Cause I personally, as we know, don't want a ton of stuff out there.
Yeah. I don't want a ton of stuff out there either. That is my personal bias as a viewer and even as a podcaster, I would rather be teased. I would rather be titillated. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be like, ooh, this just opens the door to possibilities than to be informed and to see a lot. And that's an opinion. Mm-hmm. I understand other people have different opinions. I'm not saying that is the way it should be done. I'm saying that's the way that I personally prefer it. I would rather see something in the show than in the trailers. But as this question brings up and other questions bring up, there's that question of, is that best for Star Wars? That's great that's right. My personal preference. Right. But is that best for Star Wars? And I think to one of the points that Andrew makes, looking at Book of Boba Fett, I think there is that question of we're so young in streaming numbers and what the goal is. Like, if Book of Boba Fett was a movie, I bet we would have seen a lot more, right? Because there would have been a lot more people saying, like, we need to account for every penny of opening weekend, anything. You know, we really got to throw ourselves behind this. But streaming is young. And what the other than as many subscribers as possible, the exact goal of that is still, being decided. So I think for Book of Boba Fett, I really think that the trailers told people exactly what the heart of the show and the narrative is about. Fett isn't a hunter anymore. He wants to change the system and rule with respect, not fear. He wants to bring people together. That is the show, right? That's what it establishes at the beginning. That's what the last episode supports. Mm-hmm. But as Andrew points out, that leaves a ton on the table, I think maybe a clip in particular of Din Djarin might have helped communicate what the show is, that it is truly a chapter in the Mandoverse story. And I think that's less about hype and more about clarity, right?
Clarity. Yeah, that's great. Clarity.
And that would have maybe prevented people from bumping as much on chapter 5 and 6, right? My personal take on this, and I have zero inside information. It's just my opinion. I think that is Favreau. I think the keeping things really, really under lock and key for Book of Boba Fett, of not tipping the hand on anything. I think that Favreau has more power than other people in Hollywood. I think he has a kind of power that not a lot of people have in Hollywood, because he has had lots of successes. I think, you know, those live action adaptations of Disney movies made a ton of money. So he's valuable to Disney outside of Star Wars. He could probably take any project to any studio and be fine. You know, if he wanted to jump in and go, you know what, I want to go back to the MCU, he'd be fine. He has a level of power that not a lot of creators do. I personally think that the reason that a Mandalorian book was announced and written and then pulled in a visual dictionary too, right? Yeah. I think he's really like, let the story be the story on screen. I think he can exert more influence on the trailers than other people can, just looking at his accomplishments and his flexibility within the industry. And again, this is me just having an opinion. I have zero actual, like, I don't got buried sources whispering this to me. That's just my opinion, looking at his career, looking at the industry, and looking at the kind of decisions that have been made around Mandalorian.
I don't disagree with that at all. And for better or worse, JJ probably had that kind of control over the Rise of Skywalker trailers and stuff that was going out. You do hear those kind of tales, but I it makes some sort of sense, particularly with the Book of Boba Fett, even how the end credit scene pops up, something kind of new to us at Star Wars, the series, him kind of writing all of it. It seemed like they had some fun. And again, I think there's some research behind all that, and I'm sure Kathleen Kennedy would fight him on anything she needed to fight him on in terms of getting it out there. I think it's a case of, when it comes to the marketing, you're damned if you, damned if you don't. If you had showed Luke, that would have ignited half the fan base. It also would have set the other half aflame, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is really fascinating. We talked about this a little bit, so in a recent Q's of the Force, so I won't remix too much, but I think the Kenobi promotions are really trying to frame the show of what it's going to be, right? The Vader reveal could have been hidden easily, but the Vader reveal is potentially controversial, and it will definitely draw more people in because it's Vader. And I think, unlike kind of the presentation that Andrew is making of like Book of Boba Fett could have shared a lot more, right? I think with Kenobi, they're being like, don't worry, he's going to leave the planet. We know some people will be excited that Vader's there. Some people will be maybe not thrilled, but he's coming. And they're trying, I think, to get a little bit more information out there.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. Absolutely. And again, I keep going back to, you know, damn if you do, damn if you don't. It just means it's like, I personally don't know. And I am trying to set my personal feelings aside of scoops of not wanting to know too much these days, where in the past I didn't care. I didn't care about Revenge of the Sith. Give me all the details in the trailer. And I wasn't, it's just, a lot has changed. Social media has changed the conversation, changed the speed of the conversation. And sometimes to a frustrating level, obviously. So I think you're right. Streaming is still early, and they're trying to figure that all out.
Yeah, and I mean, and right now, social media is excited about week to week reveals, right? Even down to, dropping the character posters after every episode, right? So I think that is a little bit of the marketing plan right now. So I don't, it feels to me like Kenobi is different, like that they are trying to definitely not spill every little detail. I think the trailer is only the first couple episodes at most, but they're also really trying to get ahead of it, of like, he's getting off planet, Vader's in it. So I think it's a mix.
And the character posters is a great example of a real clear thought of after of episode, then we'll market what you saw in the episode, because that probably drives some conversations versus... Yeah. Force Friday, which was, and again, those were mostly related to films, but it was a different approach. And yeah, we don't see a lot of the toys before. It's Lego leaks that usually reveal plot details or ship names and stuff like that. And so that's a clear effort of not catching up, but just like it content. You know, then I don't know how none of those means. I don't know how much of it is about engagement. I know engagement numbers are very popular, that Old Republic short released recently, co-written by a friend of the show, Alec Backus, had amazing amounts of engagement for a Star Wars a piece of material. And that was tracked down to every like, every dislike and everything. So I think the character posters is a great example. You maybe just think about it, Joseph, of we know we get longer conversations out of surprise, and then let's celebrate that surprise for a week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe that good, bad, or otherwise, I think right now a little bit of the slow drip is going to continue because that does, I think, keep the conversation going longer. Last thing for me that I want to address in Andrew's great thoughts here is I do agree about, I would love some of the merch to get out faster, right? Mm-hmm. I would love if the character poster drops and then, you know, also, here's your Danny Trejo as Rancor Keeper action figure. Here's your t-shirt. Here's your Ranky the Rancor lunchbox with Grogu napping on it the day after. I think that would help the hype. It's a way that Star Wars fans, again, good, bad, or otherwise, have always expressed their love is through capitalism. You know, through buying things and through making these stories a part of our day-to-day lives. And for me, you know, it is a bummer that I've pre-ordered Boba Fett from Book of Boba Fett action figure and have to wait months and months and months. So whatever that chain is that makes those decisions, I'm totally with Andrew. I would love a little bit more merch right away.
Yeah, that I don't disagree with that at all.
Excellent. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I was going to go. He mentioned the kind of curbing the speculation and everything. I don't think you'd need to do that. I think just because that's not fun. That's part of the fun is to wonder, you know, this week, what is Christopher Lloyd going to maybe do in Mando 3? That's part of the fun. I just think it's the way that we just can't go back on modern film punditry, genie out of the bottle, so to speak, of just like how we discuss things sometimes is often so on the surface. It's so about speculation, so about predictions. And then you discuss how your predictions weren't wrong and what that meant. And I just think we can't change that. No marketing will change that.
Yeah, I definitely understand the thought process of the more we leave unknown, the more people go, ooh, let's make up. They're not going to tell us who Christopher Lloyd is going to be, so let's make it up. Now I'm attached to my idea that I came up with Christopher Lloyd. I think that is definitely a danger. It's some of where our, you know, talking about speculating responsibly comes from. I just think that's a challenge we all have to go on. I am so excited for that Kenobi show. I have so many different thoughts of what it could be. And when I sit down to watch them, I have to, like a Jedi, let it go, you know, and engage with the story that we're presented with. It's a challenge. And I think it's just kind of, it's one of those challenges that is, in my opinion, down to each one of us as fans to get really excited about your idea. Wouldn't it be cool if, and then to let it go if that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Speaking of answers, we're going to move on to our final question. This comes from Andrew Holmes. Andrew says, "Hi, Force Centurions." A bit of a fun, silly one here. In light of your recent acknowledgement of all the incredible stunt performers that have come to our attention on screen, I, for one, love Eunice on the set in the Rise of Skywalker documentary. What are your favorite stunts in Star Wars, which are thrilling, incomprehensible, fun, silly, just plain hilarious? Hello, Luke Skiff Force Kick in Return of the Jedi. Keep up the fantastic work. Passion and light. May the Force be with you. And may the Force be with you, Andrew. Thank you for the kind words. Let's talk stunts. Ken, what are your favorite stunt moments in Star Wars?
A recent one because of that, Doc. I loved it in the trailer. I loved it in the film. But seeing what went into just Rey's leap over Kylo's TIE fighter was really just like an old classic kind of stunt there, along with some modern effects indeed, but it was just still pretty cool for me. And then everything in that doc, it's all right. Eunice, she's just a superstar in that doc. So I love that. But my answer, it's funny. He mentions, Andrew mentions the Luke, Skiff, Force kick, the greatest worst kick ever on film. Right. I would say, but that whole Sarlacc battle was just a testament to 80s stunt magic, including Boba Fett flailing and hitting the wall and everyone jumping into the Sarlacc pit. Even though you look back now and it's like, oh, some of them are doing swan dives, like, you know, the stunt workers are, but that was inspired me as a kid. I have told that story of my school playground had this big wooden / metal monstrosity of a play thing that wouldn't pass any safety tests now. And in fact, was pulled down a couple years after I left that school. But that's what we would do 9 times out of 10 lunch recesses, is reenact the Sarlacc pit
jumping off, and it just inspired so much. I'm not a stunt performer, but I have a lot of friends out here who are stunt performers, and just, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of work, the high falls, everything. It's magic. It's pure stunt magic.
Yeah. I think probably within the Sarlacc is my single, you know, favorite stunt that I'm most affected by is Luke's leap off, you know, the platform, right? And the grab and the flip, right? I can't even begin to describe just how much that flip inspired me as a kid. I think I've talked about before getting through like long car drives by pretending Luke Skywalker's running along and hopping along the light poles and doing flips. And I thought it was so, so cool. Anytime I was bored, I just looked at whatever was around. Like, I bet Luke could flip on that. It's so good. Like the force kick thing, I get it's a thing of its time. You know, you're making a film, and you know, you don't know there's going to be gifts.
Yes, yes,
right. And it worked fine. I never noticed it in the film. You know,
I didn't.
Yeah. You know, especially as a kid. But that I looked up the stuntman Colin Skeeping is credited as being Luke's main stunt double. I don't know if that's who did the flip, but. Mm. I just get happy thinking of just that. So what are some other favorite stunts for you?
I was trying to pull just a lot of the fight choreography is a certain stunt discipline as well. So you could definitely go to a lot of the Phantom Menace stuff. You know, Maul and Kenobi, but even Revenge of the Sith, that final fight with Anakin and Kenobi. I mean, that's why one of the reasons I'm so excited for this rematch is just the energy they put into that. And all the fight choreography there, that struck to mind. Even going back to Rise of Skywalker, I don't know why, but the Pisana chase where they all get into the sinking sand is a fun little classic kind of stunt moment for me as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think every second of anything choreographed by Nick Gillard, whether it's performed by professional stunt people or the instances we know of where like Ewan and Hayden, you know, trained so hard, you know, obviously Samuel Jackson's like, let me at it. he's so great is a fight choreographer, Nick Gillard. So I love that. Ray's leap over Kylo's TIE whisper. One of the great ones. Vader's leap off the stairs in the carbon freezing chamber in Empire Strikes Back. How did that hit you growing up, Ken?
Love that one. That's a great example. I love that one. It's also seems painful to the shins. I'm not the type of kid who liked to get air too often. My skateboarding career failed.
Oh right, yeah. It just looks like Vader is stage diving, right? In the who's going to catch the Sith Lord?
Yeah, love that. That's a
that
great
one's
one.
Great. Final thing for me is I am not a professional stunt person at all, but in my live performance career, particularly doing comedy, I was a big fan of pratfalls, and I have done a lot of pratfalls and you know, some amount of study of the science of that. There's one show I did where we had it was a Shakespeare show, and we had fight call for safety for like the sword fights, and that was really fun to do. I had a, you know, a big metal sword, but I still tried to spin it like a lightsaber. Just I'm sure not the way it was meant to be done, but I could not be stopped. They gave me a sword. I was going to try to spin it like Obi-Wan. But there was also like slapstick in it. And I started to say like, hey, can we please also have like slapstick call? because there's the like fighting is very serious. Like falling down is two or ducking somebody's arm, you know, even though it's slapstick, it's dangerous. All of that is to say, in Rise of Skywalker in particular, there are some great spills. There's that one stormtrooper who falls down the stairs, and then Finn kind of leaps over him, like he shoots him down, he falls and leaps over him. That's some great falling down work.
I love that. You know what I was thinking too, Return of the Jedi speeder bike sequence, obviously a favorite for a lot of different reasons for a lot of us, but when Luke does the leap off his speeder, right? He does like a big fall. Vroom, and I've always been like, that had to have hurt. Jedi or not, that had to hurt.
I don't care who you are. That's got to hurt.
Yeah. And you're making me laugh because the Luke, the fall in the Sarlacc pit and the flip over to reenact that, whoever had the role of Luke that day in recess, you would get up on the thing, you would jump down and then slowly climb back up the wooden plank stairs and be like, ta-da. And that started the whole sequence.
Perfect 10. Perfect 10. Well, that is a great, fun question. Thank you for all the questions. Andrew, also Andrew, ostensible and Oscar film forecast. Thank you all. Any other thoughts on any of these questions, Ken?
No, I think I need to go. I think I'm going to do some Return of the Jedi watching this week.
Yeah. Even just the Jabba's Palace sequence. Great stuff. Yeah. Where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can get this podcast on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, a lot of other places. Just search and you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get into our Discord where you can have a wonderful conversation about Star Wars, all sides of it, with several Force Center friends. You can find me at Kednapsock. Go to Kednapsock.com for more information, including upcoming comedy shows. We'll see if I use Star Wars in it. Spoiler, I will. We are still highlighting things, charities out in the world, and obviously, with the there's so many things out there in the state of the world. So find what interests you, what's in your heart, and with what's going on in Ukraine, still very close to my heart as well. And one of the places you can go to support is globalgiving.org/projects/Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund and help some of the people who are just being directly affected by war over there. Joseph, for you, sir.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all my other stuff on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I want to continue to highlight the organization Vote Forward. Basically, you write personal messages to voters about why you vote and encourage them to vote, to use their power and their voice. If that is something that you'd be interested in doing or just learning more about, you can go to their website at votefwd.org. For now, for myself, for Ken, for Luke Skywalker, flipping around anywhere you want to imagine, this has been Questions of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.